Yeah, I'm hurting a fair bit right now. It's been an awesome year. I just want to thank you, thank all the teammates, thank everyone involved in this year. It's been an awesome ride, so thank you.
Good boy.
A very Dusty Martin there last night at the Richmond BNF, the Jack Dyer Medal. Didn't even win it. It's taken out by Jaden Short, who's the Jack Dyer medalist for 2020. Lee Matthews would be happy that he got these votes right eventually for the Norm Smith medal, and Jaden Short took out the BNF. Rodney Eade knows a bit about Best and Fairest and those awards and this time of year because he's been a part of it as a player and a coach. He knows a fair bit about it. It's great to have him a part of our team. Rocket, good morning.
Morning, Daniel. How are you, mate? How are you?
Going well.
Going well?
We're good.
Good. Good.
We're good.
Enjoy the grand final?
I love the grand final. Particularly the start of the grand final, Rocket. It was almost old school. It was physical. It was a brutal contest early doors, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was a bit of carnage, wasn't there? It was a bit of worry for both sides. And then you hear later that Hooley had heard he nicked his calf as well. So obviously the Tigers got through that okay by the end of the game. But it was good. It was good physicality, which is great to see.
Hey, just on that, Rocket, because coaches all that have these planning meetings and the what ifs and the scenarios about what might happen on the weekend. Do you ever plan for that one where you lose one of your key defenders early for your Richmond or within the first 5 minutes and what you do about that? Have they ever come up in the what ifs?
Probably not. You probably think of the what ifs generally are things go wrong, but not of a catastrophe. So you're losing Boston, who's really certainly in their best five players, to be able to him go down then gives you the scary thought of it's easy enough to get another injury or a concussion. You could be really, really under the pump because Broad went off and it looked like he might come back on because of concussion. It's a bit scary. It'd be a bit of heart flutters, I think, in the Tigers coach's box.
Yeah, that's the worst possible outcome, I reckon, for a coaching situation, for the coach's box, to have one of your key strategic players, the structural players, go down in the first couple of minutes of a grand final. Surely that has to throw a cat amongst the pigeons.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And especially, have a look at the Tigers, because obviously we'll talk about tactics and what teams can change. Richmond don't normally change. They haven't got the capacity, but their forwards are forwards, their backs are backs. And the mids, they don't really change their players. Like Blossom doesn't go forward, or Grimes doesn't go forward, or there's no forwards that'll go back. They generally are pretty settled. There's not many changes. So having Blossom, as you said, him and Grimes are probably the two key defenders. Him going out, it does throw it amongst the, as I said, the cat amongst the pigeons. So there's six defenders in them, would have seven, so there's six defenders would have to play most of the game, so there wouldn't be much of a rest. I think the scary thing would be if we get another one, what do we do? So,
is it one of the sort of, sorry, Rocker, but is it one of the, I guess, not secrets to their success, but one of the reasons why Richmond's been so successful is that they do keep it simple, not just in positionally, but even just the way that they play, that under pressure, by keeping it fairly simple, they seem to respond really strongly in that situation?
I think that may be the case. I think that shows probably their system and their belief in each other is, I think as Chris Cross said pre-game, that you can plan to know what they're going to do. So, and they are predictable in that way, predictable in their unpredictability, if that's the right phrase. But it's an interesting one. I think we'll talk a bit later, but I think Geelong at half time would have thought, oh, well, it's not broke. We don't have to fix it. But I would have thought that make a change or two then. I'm talking going the opposite way for them. Have a look at the Bulldogs. They're flexible. They throw their players around a bit. And we talk about that as a positive. So I think it's just knowing your own players, your own team, and then having confidence in what you're going to put into place. And you don't need to change much for them. I think other teams to change it around. I think what it is with Richmond, if you're in opposition, I think you need to throw them different looks at it. So if you get into the same mode, that suits them because I think they will beat you at the fact of being predictable as far as having players in the same spot. I think you need to throw them different looks at it. So I think it's horses for courses, mate, to be honest.
So I'm going to ask both of you, as coaches, is it too simplistic to say that Richmond has a simplistic way of playing? Because I think the headline about Richmond is that they're a surge team. They just get it forward, they just kick it forward, whatever they can do, and keep the ball in motion. Is it too easy to say, there's not many tactics to that, that's just instinctive footy? I'll be really interested in what you guys think of how they play and whether... And why not more teams don't replicate the way that they go about it, considering they've now won three of the last four premierships?
I certainly like the way they play. I think it is a bit too simplistic to say that, because they'll use angles going forward. They do use hands. They'll go corridor, so whenever a player receives a ball under pressure, he'll turn corridor side with the hands, and there's always runners. So they've got a good style. There's good support. It's just not... bang it forward. What they do under, once there's three, four, five handballs, and then there's a bit of heat. I think it was a good one the other night where they handballed a lot and got it to Edwards, and he just kicked it forward because he knew the pressure was coming. So they seem to be well trained that when there's real heat, let's get it going forward. Then when there's something you can't do with a footy, that's the time to get it going forward, where a lot of teams, a lot of players, have three, four, five handballs, then they'll go six and seven and eight and just draw the pressure. And I think that's good. I think they use the angles. They try. They hit leading targets when they're given time and space. They switch the ball a lot out of the back half. And their tactics have improved a fair bit over the finals at stoppages. They've been beaten at stoppages. Mm. Martin, the way he's flipped out of stoppages, I don't think St Kilda coped with that really well. Brisbane didn't either. So I think... it's the same personnel, but just doing a little subtleties at certain times of stoppages, and I think that's helped them as well.
Yeah, I really admire the way they play, because it looks, on the surface wider, I think it does look as if it's get the ball and just go without too much system. But there is always an outlet and an out option, and I think that's one of the great things in footy for great teams to have any level. Always give yourself an out, and Richmond have always got a player in position to just get the ball out to stop the flow and just gain possession if they need it. Because I think they want to keep the ball in motion, as we've seen for years now, Rocket, but they've always got the out if they need it. Even if that quick one under pressure, it'll go out on the angle to the 45 because they'll know someone will be there, probably on the outside of their opponent, and get first crack at that footy, even if it doesn't get to them cleanly. Clearly, behind the ball, they're really well-structured and they use it pretty well, and they get the handball across the nose to break that line, Rocket, which is one of their great strengths as well, really quickly from the back half. But the ability to have always someone in a position as a safety outlet, I think, is one of their great challenges, but great successes as a coaching staff to beat teams, because everyone is looking like they're going to just have to deal with manic ball movement going forward and deal with bodies at them. But they've always got a nice little sneaky out too to take the heat off when they need it.
So I think they do control the ball a bit. I think we're not giving them enough credit for that. But they're quite happy to have chaos ball, if we call it that way. Yep. Once we're under pressure, they're happy to soccer it, which is a great way to be, because why it stands up in finals is because there's a lot more pressure in finals. So therefore, they've practiced that, and that's their game style. Under heat, just get it going forward. We know where it's going. And as Harf said, they position themselves really well. They know if they're not involved in the contest, where they need to be, how far off the contest, what side of their opponent they need to be, especially if they're a kick away and on the outside or the change of direction. But if they get quick hands out of stoppages or out of the contest, that they generally do look for targets and they'll use the angles. And I don't think we give them enough credit for that. But I think they'll sit back and they're not worried about that. But the thing I like is under real pressure, they don't try and do too much, which we see players and teams get into trouble when they try and do too much, try and take the world on, and they just get caught holding the ball. And I think they cope with that pressure well because they know they can just knock it on and get it going forward.
And I think that was the point, and I'm glad you mentioned it the way you did, Rocket, about, you know, because you always want to try and learn lessons from what the good teams did well in the highest of high pressure situations. And whether it be the preliminary final when the game was close against Port Adelaide or the way that they were able to get themselves back into the game against Geelong, it just felt like under enormous pressure, the way that they play their football stands up a lot more than other teams that do feel like they're a little bit more structured, and there seems to be a little bit more intricacies to their success in the way that they need to play. So I just thought that the way you've explained it's quite good.
And I think for players, you get confidence knowing that it's okay to just kick it forward, and they're probably just reinforced. So you know if you're under real pressure, well, I don't have to do anything, and it's marvellous what pressure will create in your mind. Because a lot of players, most players think, well, I've got to do something with the ball, and you'll see them hang on to it a bit longer, and you say, what did you do that for? Because he's looking for an option. He's looking to give to somebody, and if there's no one there, well, he's creating pressure for himself, where Richmond, it's okay to do that, just get it going forward. So they've got, so the lesser players, if that's right, their bottom six, are confident enough, well, it's not a mistake for me just to sock the ball forward, get it going our way.
Yeah.
So they feel that they're fitted in pretty well. So there's no mental pressure on them to perform that way.
Rocket Eads with us on a Tuesday morning. Thanks to Bocca Espresso, boccaespresso.com.au. Sound like Dusty Martin might have needed a few Bocca Espressos after the BNF last night. Rocket, to stay awake after a big party, I imagine, after the Premiership.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought he'd be mellow in that situation. I know he's a very quiet, humble sort of guy, but I think that's his playing field, isn't it? I think so. Look, he was certainly the difference. I think out of his three Norm Smiths, I think his first one was probably one that he may have lost. I think Hooley, there was conjecture on that, but he played well, so there's no drama. But his last two were certainly the one on Saturday night. He was best player, the most influential player. In the ground, and they had plans for him, and he was able to overcome that. And I think that's the mark of a great player, isn't it? The plans they've had for him and what it is he's performed.
So, Rocket, you've been around footy a long time, a long, long time. Played with arguably the greatest in Lee Matthews. Where does Dustin Martin sit now? Because I think we can start to make those sort of assessments around him, because he's a three-time premiership player, three-time Norm Smith medalist. Where does he sit now for you?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think he's consistent. What I judge is the high level of performance which he's got, but then the consistency of doing that. And that's the great players. They're able to do that consistently. And I think he's done that, probably not early in his career like Lee has, but I think he'd be up there because of his finals performances. Mm-hmm. He'd be able to perform on the big stage and win games, not only just play really well, but to be able to influence those games and really be the catalyst for the team to win. So you'd certainly put him up there in my time, so it's 40 years, but the top 10 and maybe top 5 of players that in the competition because of his finals performances.
And that goal before half time sort of set the train rolling for the Tigers, didn't it? But the Cats were 22 points up at that stage, Rocket. How did they do that? And then what happened to them after that?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I've been thinking about it. I thought at half time when I went in, I thought that was a goal that really obviously helped the psyche of the Tigers. Not that you doubt them because of the preliminary final last year against the Cats. It was a similar situation. Mm. But you go in at half-time as a coach, just take you mentally as a coach, that it's back to that situation we spoke before of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So that Geelong would have had that mentality. They've had the discussion, obviously, of Dangerfield. We'll come back to that. But the Tigers don't change the magnets. But if I was Geelong, what I always go at half-time and say, if you're in front, okay, what's the opposition going to do? Don't go in so much with the say, it's not, ain't broke, don't fix it. The opposition are going to change things because they're behind and we've dominated. So we're not going to get exactly what we've been able to get in the first half. So be prepared for that. And I always find it funny that teams will say, oh no, we're playing well, so we'll just leave it as it is. Well, the opposition are going to cut someone down. They're going to put a clamp on something. They're going to change their style. Whatever it is, they're going to do something. And if you look at them previously, there's always a pattern what they do. In the old days when I was coaching, Sheeds would always throw Wanganeen in the middle. Always. So you knew it was coming. So you planned for when Wanganeen went into the centre, okay, this is what we're going to do. You just knew what was going to happen. And people say it was unpredictable, but it was predictable because there was a pattern of what happened. So for me at half-time, I would have thought, they don't change the magnets much, but they're going to lift their intensity and work rate. They are going to have a focus on the contest, and they're going to have a focus on putting pressure on us. That's what I thought was going to happen. So if in the Geelong camp, what do you do to that? Okay, do we leave it as it is? Or do you throw our best into the middle to be able to combat that with our physicality? And even if it's neutral, and then and it's the third quarter's nil or draw or we lose by a goal, well, that's great. But I think, they, and everyone said that, but I would have thought maybe Dangerfield not playing in the middle was, I know it's easy in hindsight, but I thought at the time, well, throw him in there because at least then it's going to be combative because that's what Richmond are going to throw up. And Richmond threw their pressure, they threw the sink at them and everything. And they were able, you could tell the intensity straight away, couldn't you? They got territory straight away, got the first clearance, and all of a sudden it's just manic pressure. And the Geelong players that did okay in the first half had started to make mistakes. So I think that's where the game changed, was just the lift in intensity, which you have to give credit to Hardwick for that. So they've obviously got the players to change their psyche and change their mindset, and they went back to the way we know Richmond play.
So once that momentum's turned, and it happened, as you said, it happened pretty much effectively from the first clearance to the third quarter, what were you thinking from a Geelong perspective about ways to minimise that, to stop that, get it back to neutral, and hopefully get it back in your favour again, which they didn't really for the rest of the game?
No. I thought really the only way to do it wasn't... You could put some players behind the ball, but then you would never get the ball inside your forward 50 because they'd set up so well behind the ball. So that's it's always a balancing act. Geelong certainly love to have a spare player all the time, so they'll keep the one at home. But I think the only thing you could have done is to put your best players in around the ball. The other option was, which they've never done, so it's... is get Dangerfield to play like Martin, is of that start of the middle, then go to the swap over with some high half forward role, and then from there go and play as an extra mid. So don't get the guys at high half forward, say it's Parfitt. Don't get Parfitt to go play as an extra mid because they'll drop off him. Dangerfield can start in the middle, swap over with Parfitt at the next stoppage, then Dangerfield go and play as a mid, so you've got an extra, he'll get followed. So therefore it opens your forward line a bit and you're creating an extra number around the ball. So therefore, more difficult for Richmond to win the ball to go forward, but also gives you a bit more chance yourself to put pressure on them or be able to neutralise the footy.
Jimmy was talking yesterday about the fact that with Dangerfield staying forward, it might have sent a signal to the team that Chris Scott and the coaching staff didn't believe what they had up there outside of him was going to impact the game, and could have moved him to the middle, but they would have been lacking something forward and firepower forward. Did you read into that similarly?
No, not really. Oh, but if that's the case, playing Dangerfield, as I said, that gives him that option that he plays as a mid forward. Mm. So he plays at the centre bounce. Then they flip over and he's technically a high forward, not the deep forward. Playing in deep forward, the ball never got there. Playing him as that high forward who goes into stoppages with the licence to play rogue, to go forward whenever he wants to run forward with the ball, so with the flow of the play. So I think he would have been then in and around the action consistently, would have been a ball that comes into the stoppage and with the ability and the approval to get out of that to run forward. So I think leaving him at deep with him not winning the ball was took his impact out, and also they were losing the game.
Can he play as a forward? I mean, looking forward, you know, we've talked about this a lot, I understand, but is Dangerfield just a pure midfielder? Is he someone that can pinch it forward, or can you see him as he gets, you know, further into his career, perhaps being a little bit like someone that can kick your 50 goals as a forward? Bearing in mind that Jeremy Cameron's going to come to the club next year, what do they do with him?
It's a good point. I don't think he's got 100% forward craft. I think he's just athletic and got a good instinct for football, and he was good mark and fly, but he kicked one goal one or whatever he did. I think I'd be playing him, as I said, I'd be playing him as that flip out of the stoppage, go high half forward, that he still impacts around it because he's so athletic and so gifted with his running. So limiting him at full forward, opposition would prepare for that. They would get a drop off and they play a good player on him, so it makes it more difficult for him to have that impact consistently. So I would play him like Richmond play Martin, where he's a midfielder, but he plays centre forward. He plays centre forward. He just runs where he wants to run. And Lambert comes in, or Graham comes in off the half forward, and they play the midfield role. So he's technically an extra midfielder, but he's just playing forward of the play. And he's impacting stoppages, but he's also impacting on the scoreboard. And I think Dangerfield could get to that stage. There's no doubt.
3 out of 4 for the Tigers, Rocket. Can you see it ending?
Not yet, no. I think most of them are a reasonable age. Rewalt's 31, 32, so he started to drop off a bit, Jack. So you'd think that may just continue a little bit. The rest of the players are 28, 29, that are really good players. So I think there's another year or so in them, to be honest. But they need. I think their list management's been very good. They know they have to shed players at times because of salary cap. That's why Butler left. And they'll identify youngers, like they obviously thought Bolton was better than Butler or down the future. So they've kept Bolton. They'll do that again. They'll keep some. They'll get some youngsters in. They obviously won't be able to trade much. But, yeah, I think they've got at least another one and maybe 2 years to be able to challenge.
I think, interestingly, guys, when you look at Richmond's best and fairest from last night, it wasn't just so much that Jaden Short was the winner, but you've got Shea Bolton finishing fourth, Liam Baker finishing inside the top seven. I think he finished sixth. A lot of their younger players, there would be a top seven finisher. but it did look like that the younger players that are emerging aren't just becoming bit players. They're a lot better than that. And I think Bolton clearly is one of those in the midfield. They've found another midfielder. But I think Liam Baker's also become a really good player. I know, Harvey, you've been talking about him a lot this year. Some of the things he did in the last two finals under pressure were very, very impressive. So that next group coming through look like they're a bit better than just role players.
No, they are. And I think Noah Bolter's another one. So there's a young player who's...
He looks
who's,
a star.
Who's, he does. Jack Graham's only 22. So they've got... I think Short and Baker are a good balance for their defence. Just that smaller, quicker players. Short's such a good kick. But Geelong haven't got that as well. If you go back to Geelong, they're all mediums to tall. Buse, I suppose, is the only one. The rest of them are, you know, language, 6'1", 6'2" plus. So there's a bit of imbalance there on the ground level. But they've done well. McIntosh did well, but I know he's a little bit older. But... Now they've got a good balance with their age profile, but you know, Cochin, Martin, Chris is only 26, 27, but the others are getting up there, but it's still got a couple of years left, I think. So they'll need, once those stars go, it'll be interesting about who they get to be stars, to be the real A-graders.
Now, Gary, it's all over for Gary. It's very sad. He's the best player I've seen over the last 25, 30 years. For you, you got to coach him. Sort of reflecting back on him now, what would you like to say about Gary?
Oh, he's a super player. Things he could do. You haven't seen many players, if any, but to do it consistently, under real heat, to be able to do what he could do with the ball... in the bowling sense, he used to make it sing, didn't he? He could bend it either way. His ability to hit a target when under real duress, win the ball, his touch, but his ability to change direction, that short stature he had and the power he had in his legs, a bit like his old man, the power. He's a super player. So, I think to be able to play to 36 or 2 is a testament to the way he prepared himself, his body. He was really professional in the way he'd go about preparing himself. And it's unfortunate that same shoulder gave way on Saturday night, but he's certainly going to be remembered as one of the greats of the game. And I think Richmond were really classy the way they helped the send-off after the game, but I think the way he's... measured in the football world is a quality player, but a quality person. He's a really good fellow.
Yeah, hard to argue with that for the great champion, Gary Ablett Jr., who signs off after 357 games with the Cats and the Suns, of course, throughout his time of brilliance in the AFL world. Rocket, you've been brilliant with us for season 2020. It's always great chatting footy with you on Tuesday morning. We look forward to what happening for many, many more seasons. You've got a few left in you, Rocket. Go get them.
Thanks very much, boys. Have a good one, and look forward to trade week or trade month, maybe, I suppose, with the AFL not coming to agreement with the players. That's going to be interesting, isn't it? What's going to happen there? So that's going to put the cat amongst the pigeons for a while. So, but I think you mentioned earlier, Huff, I think the trade period is going to be really active. I think I've got a feeling that the hub life has made a few players disenchanted, which is probably their own doing rather than clubs. I think clubs have handled pretty well, but I think go and look for different ideas and give them a different perspective on it. So we might be a fairly active period, so interesting to see.
We should have enough to talk about, I reckon. And we'll need a few Bocca Espressos to just get us through. BoccaEspresso.com.au.
Yeah, 100% compostable, boys. So get on the website.
Get enough of that. BoccaEspresso.com.au brings us Rocket Aid on the Breakfast Club. Thank you, pal.
See you, guys.